It is Your Money, and I am Susie Jones, back in the saddle with you after 2 weeks off. And we have with us, as always, Bruce Helmer, who is the founder of the Wealth Enhancement Group, and he's a financial advisor. Also, Peg Webb, senior financial advisor, and I should say senior vice president and financial advisor, Peg Webb. Welcome to both of you, and I'm sorry if I sound a little under the weather. I'm back from my two-week vacation, and I got a cold.
Oh, no.
I know, Peg. It was terrible.
I missed you guys.
Where were you?
I missed you guys the last couple of weeks, because, and I had two really, really good guests on, Ryan McEwen from our Mankato office, and he did this open line show with me, and he's the guy that I call the walking encyclopedia. I mean, he knows everything about everything.
Awesome.
And then... yeah, last week we had Wendell Clark from Atlanta, Georgia in our office, and that was about how are you feeling, like behavioral science behind decisions that you make. So, But Bruce, I missed you too.
Well, I missed you both. Peg, thanks for doing the heavy lifting the last 2 weeks while Susie and I were gone. But
where were you, Bruce? Were you anywhere fun?
Yeah, well, you know, I was. It was kind of a bucket list thing for us. Susie, Pamela, and I went and took a train trip through the Swiss Alps and in northern Italy, ending in Lake Como, and it was kind of a thing we've always talked about. We finally decided to pull the trigger and do it.
Awesome. Did you take a ship or an air? How did you get around?
Yeah, train.
You said that.
Train trips, and it's beautiful. And my favorite place was a place I'd never heard of before, called Zermatt, Switzerland. It's right at the base of the Matterhorn. So every morning I'd get up and have my coffee on my balcony and look right at the Matterhorn. It was beautiful.
Oh, that's awesome.
What did you do?
I was in Ireland for 2 weeks. And I learned so much history that my head hurts.
Aren't they nice there, though? They're so kind and accommodating.
So accommodating. It's just almost too much. I had someone say I was going to sleep, and they said, well, do you want a hot water bottle to warm your bed? I'm like, okay.
That's awesome.
Anyway, nice to be back. And, Peg, you did great, and I wish I would have heard them, because we all could use help with behavioral science and what makes us do what we do.
Yeah, Peg, thank you for, again, doing the heavy lifting and carrying the ball the last couple of weeks. I don't think, Peg, I've ever in the history of our show taken off 2 weeks in a row. And it felt, you know, I'm glad I took the trip and I had fun, but I was ready to get back, and I'm glad to be here today. And we're so fortunate. We've been talking for weeks about the one big, beautiful bill, and it's been signed. It's law now. And we've talked a lot about it and how it's going to impact people. But the one thing we really haven't talked much about is how is it going to affect your estate planning, or will it affect your estate planning? And we're very fortunate to have with us today, those of you that have been regular listeners over the years will recognize Kate Meyer. Kate's been on the show many times. She's been with Wealth Enhancement since 2007. She's a specialist in tax and estate planning, core member of the roundtable, someone that Peg and I both have leaned on a lot over the years. She got her undergraduate in economics and French from Cornell College. She's got a JD from Hamline University School of Law, where she concentrated on estate planning, tax planning, elder law, and she's a certified financial planner. And, Kate, thank you for being with us. I swear I'm not just saying this to be nice. I would say this privately, publicly. I gain every time I talk to you. I think I learn something.
Oh, well, that's nice to hear. And it's good to be here again. It's been a while.
It's been way too long, and I kind of forgot all those things that you have, the knowledge. But since 2007, that's 18 years ago, we've been working together. And thank you for all that you do for us on the roundtable. Hey, you know what I was thinking is first – oh, go ahead.
I was going to say I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Oh, that's so great. Well, you know what I thought we should just talk about first is Bruce kind of led into it, estate planning. How did the one big beautiful bill kind of change when you think about the estate planning? One of the things a lot of clients were waiting to hear about is what is the amount of taxes that we have to pay upon death.
Yeah, so the thing that the One Big Beautiful Bill did for estate planning was put some certainty into it, because pretty much since the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was passed, when they had that sunset built in that was supposed to happen in 2026, we've kind of been going, will they or won't they? Will they pass a new bill? Is it going to sunset, or are they going to continue the high exemptions? And the One Big Beautiful Bill finally answered that question by continuing that high exemption that we've been enjoying since 2018 indefinitely, where indefinitely means basically until Congress passes another law that changes it. But at least there's nothing built in where it's just going to sunset. So going forward, so this year, the estate tax exemption federally is $13.99 million per person. Next year, the bill raises it up to $15 million per person. And then going forward, it's just going to keep going up with inflation adjustments every year. So that was really the big change there, was just this adding some certainty in there. Beyond that, the 40% tax bracket is the same. There's a slight increase in the exemption, probably over what an inflation adjustment would have given us next year. Otherwise, it's pretty much the same thing we've had since 2018.
So one of the things is, you're talking about $14 million, $15 million apiece. A lot of the listeners might think, well, that's not me. But one of the things that we utilize a lot for all clients is, if they want to give money, to anyone, like family members, that kind of thing, did that change at all, the annual amount that you can give away your money to while you're still alive?
We don't know what it'll be next year. They didn't change it this year. So this year you can still give however many people you want $19,000 without having to worry about, filing a gift tax return or anything like that. But that said, if you're well under those federal exemption amounts, that $19,000 is just kind of, keep it in mind, but it doesn't matter if you exceed it, because only people who have to pay estate taxes in the future really have to worry about exceeding that, because it reduces their federal estate tax exemption at death. But everybody else can just continue, if you need to loan money to your child to help, or give money to your child to help purchase a house or something, don't worry about that $19,000 limit, because it probably is not going to mean anything for the vast majority of Americans. Bruce?
Peg? Go ahead, Bruce. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, Peg. I was just going to say, of the three of us, there's no question I'm the dumbest of the three. So I see my role is sometimes to dumb down the conversation for the listeners. A couple quick things I wanted to mention. Kate, you talked about the estate tax at the federal level. It should be pointed out that depending upon the state that you live in, and wealth enhancement does business in almost every state, and every state's a little bit different, there's a level of could be an estate tax at the state level where the benchmark is a lot lower than it is at the federal level, or maybe you don't have any estate tax at all, depending upon the state that you live in. And the other thing I wanted to mention is, and again, simplifying things, at the outset, when we start right away talking about estate planning, I maybe should have said this at the beginning before people tuned us out, I think some people go, that doesn't impact me. It's $13 million. I'm never $14 million per person. I'm never going to have that much money. This does not impact me. But A, it could be different at the state level, and B, estate planning is not just estate tax. Minimizing your estate tax might be a subset of estate planning, but estate planning, I sometimes use the term with clients, legacy planning. Estate planning, simply put, is just when you leave this world, you're probably not going to spend your last dollar the day you take your last breath. And whatever's left, money, possessions, things, where do you want it to go, and how do you get it there as efficiently and as effectively as possible? And everybody needs to do that, no matter how much money you have or don't have, how big, how little, it doesn't matter. We all should do this level of legacy planning to make sure that our assets go where we want them to go when we leave this world. Kate?
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, even if you do spend your last dollar right before you die, you still have possessions that you probably want to pass on to people. I mean, I always kind of give an example of my parents have a picture that was professionally painted that just happens to have their house in the background. in the foreground is a bunch of kids playing hockey. And my brother and I have always kind of both been coveting that for, you know, and so it might, I mean, we've worked it out now. I told my brother, I was telling the story once, and he was so distressed that I was going to fight him for it that I'm like, you know, it's yours. You're the hockey player. But things like that can be very important if there are items that, you know, more than one person might want. You still need that plan to kind of direct where it should go to hopefully cut down on any arguments that your heirs might have, any, you know, issues where they might stop talking to each other just because, you know, they ended up fighting over something where you probably could have help reduce those disagreements by kind of laying out your plan, even for your possessions. Even if you don't have a lot of dollars, you probably have possessions that need to be passed.
Let's talk about, Bruce, you brought it up, the state level. Lots and lots of the listeners are in Minnesota. So can we just use Minnesota as an example of a state level, a state tax?
Yeah, I think that is a very good point, because like I was saying, the federal exemption next year is going to be $15 million per person. With Minnesota, it's only $3 million. So you may be sitting back going, yeah, I don't have an estate tax issue at all. I'm well below $15 million. But you may have, you know, between the two of you, between, you know, husband and wife, retirement assets, a house, a cabin, where suddenly your estate is approaching or exceeding that $3 million amount. So you're going to actually end up paying estate taxes in Minnesota if you haven't done proper planning, even if you have no worries about the federal estate tax.
And that includes everything, right? Your house, maybe your farm, they add every asset you have to come up with that total.
Yes, and actually they'll even, when calculating the Minnesota estate tax, they'll even look if you have a house in Florida. Technically, that house in Florida is not subject to Minnesota estate taxes, but they still have the formula that they use to calculate the estate tax is still going to include that house in Florida before they back it out again. So you're going to want to look at the assets you have all around the country and not just in Minnesota.
So, Peg.
Go ahead, Bruce. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so estate planning or legacy planning, it's a plan where there's certain things we're going to do to pass on assets efficiently and effectively, and there's certain tools of the trade, Kate, that you use. And one of the questions I get most often is, do I need a will or do I need a trust? And then with regard to trust, what precedes the word trust? Because there's different kinds of trust. Kate, maybe speak to that a little bit in terms of some of the tools you use in this estate planning process.
Sure. Well, first, everybody needs a will, even if you decide to have a trust as well. The will is there kind of as a catch-all, because if you do have a trust, you need to make sure that you retitle everything into the trust. So if you forget that one checking account, or, you know, you never get around to retitling your house, that will is there to capture all of the rest of the stuff that doesn't get in the trust. So everybody should have a will. When it comes to trust, when we talk about trust, most people are thinking about a revocable trust, which means, you know, just what it says. It's revocable. You can fund the trust. You can write the trust. You can fund it. But then at any point, you can revoke it, take everything back. You have complete control over those assets. And the benefit of a revocable trust is kind of threefold. First, you avoid probate, which can help speed up the distribution of your assets to your heirs, because you don't have to worry about setting up the court dates, you know, all that paperwork and everything like that. So it's much easier, particularly if you have a lot of assets, to have that revocable trust where the trustee can take over, you know, pay the bills and everything, and then start distributing assets. Second, revocable trusts, because they avoid probate, give you privacy. So probate, because it goes to the courts, it actually ends up as a matter of public record. So if you have one of those nosy neighbors who just likes to look up all of their neighbors, they can actually access the probate court and see how many assets you had that passed through probate. And so if privacy is an issue for you, a revocable trust is also a very good tool for that. And then the third thing a revocable trust that a will does not, is it allows you to plan for incapacity. So you can name a successor trustee and then say, you know, if I become incapacitated or disappear or something like that, my successor trustee can take over and continue to manage the assets per the terms I've laid out in this trust. You can also do that if you have a will by using a power of attorney, It does a lot of the same things, but for some reason I've heard many, sitting in the office, you can hear the client service staff like arguing with the custodian because the custodian is insisting that they have the custodian specific power of attorney as opposed to one drafted by an attorney. Even though that attorney drafted one should be accepted, sometimes it's a little bit more difficult to get those custodians to accept it. Where a revocable trust, you just give them the trust, you say, I'm acting as trustee now. And it's much easier transition. So it's an easier transition into incapacity and into death if you have that revocable trust. So I'll stop there for a minute before I go into irrevocable trust.
Yeah, I was going to say the even just the revocable trust, there's lots of ins and outs and things that to get a qualified attorney or someone at Wealth Enhancement Group, that type of firm, we help people try to decide, what's best. Let's mention that irrevocable trust, though, because I think people get confused about revocable and irrevocable.
Right. So like I said before, revocable trust, you maintain full control over those assets. You can revoke that trust. You can amend it. You can make changes to the terms. You can change your beneficiaries. An irrevocable trust, you're giving up control once you fund that trust. Because it's irrevocable, it's very difficult to change the terms of the trust after it's written and signed. And once you put assets into the trust, you have to follow those trust terms in order to get the assets back. And so there are a lot more restrictions to an irrevocable trust than a revocable trust. The flip side of those restrictions are you're usually going to end up with estate tax savings because you've given up some control and access to those funds. The government will look at that and say, well, it's not yours anymore, so we're not going to count it for estate tax issues. So an irrevocable trust is a very good trust to use, upon the first spouse's death in a state like Minnesota, where you're trying to avoid those lower estate tax exemptions at the state level. And another thing that an irrevocable trust is very good at is creditor protection. Again, because you've given up some access and control over those assets, the courts will also look at that trust and say, well, this isn't yours. You don't really have any access to this fund. It's based on what the trustee can give you. So these assets in this trust are also going to be protected from your creditors or divorce. So that's kind of that's why people go for an irrevocable trust sometimes versus the revocable trust, because they're trying to get those assets kind of out of their estate for tax and protection purposes.
Bruce?
Oh, I'm sorry. The other thing that, and we've only got, Kate, probably about 3 minutes left before we need to take a break. If we don't get to everything in the first half, we'll finish the discussion in the second half. In the second half, we'll also get listeners involved. But, Kate, the other thing that occurs to me, we were very focused on estate taxes, but when you pass assets on to the next generation or to loved ones or to charities or whatnot, there can also be income tax consequences. And part of the role of the estate plan or the legacy plan is to minimize all taxes, not just estate taxes, but income taxes. And sometimes you can't make the tax go away, but you can determine who's going to pay it. Am I going to pay it while I'm alive, or are my heirs going to pay it when they inherit that money? Talk a little bit about the tax planning part of estate planning.
Yeah, income tax planning, because the federal exemption amount is so high these days, a lot of people actually need to worry much more about income taxes than estate taxes. And even in a state like Minnesota, where you have a Minnesota estate tax, in that case, you kind of have to do a balancing act. What is the worst tax we want to avoid? Because Minnesota's top estate tax exemption amount is 16%, whereas if you have an income tax issue, that can be, if it's a capital gains tax, that's going to be, 15% federal plus maybe another 7% Minnesota. So you're actually going to pay a higher income tax in some cases than the estate tax in Minnesota. And the other issue is retirement assets. So, those are the IRA assets. You put it away, you got a tax deduction for funding the IRA, and then eventually you're going to have to pay income taxes and you take the money out. And if there's money in the IRA left upon your death, your heirs are going to have to pay that income tax. So you're going to need to do some planning about, if you have some charitable beneficiaries, maybe leave the IRA to the charity who won't have to pay tax, or do some planning with your estate planner. Do we want to keep these assets in our estate so we can get a basis step up so there are no capital gains taxes for my heirs? or do I want to get that asset out of my estate to avoid the state estate tax? What is going to be the higher tax that we want to avoid? So there's a lot of planning around, particularly in those states with estate taxes, to figure out how to avoid first income taxes on IRAs if you're charitable, and then what is the worst tax to plan around from an income and estate tax standpoint.
And I'll take it, and I'll kind of take us home here. And Peg, what Kate's talking about now is something that we talk about a lot on the show, which is retirement income planning. All your assets that you have available to spend to fund your retirement, to get that paycheck for life, we want to make sure we're spending the smartest money. And like we always tell people, sometimes you're better off paying a little bit in taxes now to avoid a lot in taxes in the future. So your estate plan or your legacy plan and what money you spend while you're alive in your retirement are closely related, and they require planning. And it's the type of thing most people don't know how to figure this out all by themselves, and it's one of the huge, I think, value-added things that a good financial advisor brings to the table. Susie, I know we're almost out of time. We'll finish this discussion in the second half of the show, and we'll definitely get listeners involved as well.
Yeah, we're already getting a number of questions at 651-461-9226. That is the number to call or text right now as we continue to talk with Bruce, Peg, and our special guest, Kate, about taxes and estate taxes. And your questions are already coming in, 651-461-9226. Welcome back to the second half of Your Money. Bruce Helmer, Peg Webb, Kate Mayer on the line. I'll just hand it right back to you, Bruce, to reset the scene and get listeners involved. There are a number of questions, just so you know.
Thank you, Susie Jones. Thank you, listeners. If you joined us late, Kate Mayer is joining us today. Kate has been with Wealth Enhancement since 2007. She's a valued core member of the Wealth Enhancement Roundtable. She's got a BA in economics. She's got a JD from Hamline University of Law. She's a certified financial planner. She's, in short, one of the smartest people in the financial services industry that I've ever known, and it's been an asset to Peg and I multiple times through the years. She's leading our discussion today on the one big beautiful bill and how it affects your estate plan or your legacy plan. We talked a little bit about why you need to do legacy planning. It's not just about estate taxes. It can be about income taxes. It can be about leaving whatever's left of your possessions, your money, your assets when you leave this world. How do you get it? Where do you want it to go as efficiently, effectively as you possibly can? We all need to do this, whether we have a little bit of money or a lot of money. We talked about some of the tools that are used, wills versus trust, revocable versus irrevocable trust. And we talked a little bit about not just estate planning, but income tax planning. And ladies, a couple other maybe key takeaways that we want to leave to listeners before we go to questions. Peg, where do you want to take this?
Well, I think it's really important that when you talk about income taxes, we had a lot of questions a couple weeks ago on our open line show about this step up in basis and being able to just have appreciated assets go 100% to a beneficiary. And then Bruce, you mentioned, and then Kate, you followed up with it, that IRAs are kind of the most deadly thing to die with, right? Because there's so many taxes, but yet our clients love, and people listening love, to avoid paying any income tax while they're alive and then leaving it for the next generation. So maybe you could just quickly mention a couple of examples in each of those, and then the listeners would understand purely what we're talking about.
Okay, I can start with IRAs. So one way to kind of to reduce the tax hit for your heirs on IRAs, which also can be a good income tax planning strategy depending on what your required minimum distributions are going to look like in the future, is do some Roth conversions now. We know what the tax brackets are now. They're very low. You might be retired but not taking Social Security yet or not having to take those RMDs yet, so you might be in a lower tax bracket. So doing some Roth conversions now where you can get that money from an IRA where you'd have to pay income taxes to a Roth IRA where you can withdraw them tax-free and your heirs can withdraw them tax-free. When you know the income tax, when you might be in a lower bracket, that is a great way to help with your tax, with a future tax hit, both for yourself and for your heirs. And if you're also looking at an estate tax, either from the state or federal level, you know, paying that tax on the Roth conversion also kind of helps reduce your estate, which will help reduce your estate tax because you've taken, you know, the tax paid on that IRA out of your estate, whereas if it was still in the IRA, you kind of increase your estate by not having paid those income taxes yet. And then another idea for those IRA assets is if you are charitable and you're leaving assets to your charity, don't name those charities in your will or trust. Name them as beneficiaries of your IRAs, because then you're passing those tax inefficient IRA assets to a charity who is tax exempt and will not have to pay taxes on those IRAs, whereas you're then leaving more of your tax efficient Roth IRAs and maybe your non-qualified assets to your kids, so they have to pay lower taxes on those assets. And then when it comes to a basis step up, anything that you hold in your estate that is subject to capital gains taxes, if you hold it until death, it gets a step up in basis where, you know, the cost basis is the cost that you pay for that stock plus, you know, any reinvestments you've done in it. Where if you hold it to death, that cost basis goes from, say you have a stock worth $50 that you paid $10 for. You die with it at $50 in your estate. The cost basis resets to $50. So if your kids or your heirs get that asset, they could turn around and pay it for no gain. So that's what the basis step up means. Whereas if you sell that stock during your lifetime, or if you gift that asset to somebody else during your lifetime, you have that basis, either you're going to realize the gain on that basis, or you give it to somebody else and they're going to have that same low basis that you had. It doesn't get a step up when you gift it. So that's kind of some planning strategy you can do. Do I hold the stock till death to get that basis step up? Do I give it away to get it out of my estate to avoid estate taxes? Things like that. That's kind of the types of planning you want to talk about with your advisor, both your legal advisor and financial advisor.
Bruce?
Thanks, Peg. Kate, so let's wrap up with this before we go to listeners. What are some unusual or non-typical, I don't want to call them unique, but there's things that we see from time to time but are not necessarily typical or things that we see all the time. What are some kind of special circumstances that you see or we see, and how do we plan for those? And then finally, maybe a key takeaway for listeners, things they need to know or they need to understand about estate planning or legacy planning, kind of an action checklist of things they need to do. Maybe we end with those two thoughts and we'll go to questions. Kate?
Beyond, you know, we've been talking a whole lot about taxes, but another thing you need to worry about is, you know, how do you want to leave those assets to your heirs? So maybe you have a child who has special needs on public benefits. If you leave assets outright to that child, they're going to lose those public benefits until those assets are passed down. So you can leave those, and we were talking about irrevocable trusts earlier. You want to leave those assets to an irrevocable trust. Actually, it's called a special needs trust for that child. Or what if you have somebody, another child, who is perfectly capable of managing their own money, but they're married to somebody you just don't like, and you just know eventually that's going to head to divorce? That's another, you maybe not want to give assets to that child outright, because depending on how the child, you know, if they put it in a joint account or use it to pay for joint expenses, those assets might eventually be divided in a divorce. So in that case, another, again, irrevocable trust might be a good strategy for them. So beyond just thinking about taxes, you also want to figure out how you want to leave assets to your heirs. Do you want to maintain some control after death? Do you just want to delay the receipt of the asset because they're young? They just, you know, they'd be able to handle money in the future, but, you know, they're still 20 and they would probably blow it on a really nice car right now if they inherited it. So those are other things you want to consider to figure out how you want to leave those assets and the manner in which your heirs may be able to access those assets. And for those, it's really helpful to work with an attorney on that, because they'll be able to tell you your different strategies, the pros and cons, and help you figure out how to structure that type of thing for your estate to make sure that your assets are left to your heirs in a way that doesn't actually harm them. Because sometimes getting a windfall of money, it's a little too much for them. And so having some control after death, it can be very useful. And what was the other question? I went so far down that rabbit hole, I forgot what the other one was.
I maybe threw too much at you at once. And then just maybe key takeaways for listeners, you know, again, I don't think this is something anybody should try to do by themselves, but just so people have an understanding and can be more prepared, what are just some, you know, basic advice that you think, key takeaways for listeners, action items, if you will?
Yeah, well, it always helps, you know, first, like we were discussing, to determine whether or not you want just a will or if you want to put a revocable trust on there. Determine how you want your heirs to receive your assets. Make sure when you're doing those documents, you're also doing healthcare directives and powers of attorney. Those are directives, you know, that name somebody that will make decisions for you during your lifetime if you were unable to make those decisions yourself. You know, maybe if you went out tomorrow and got hit by a car, ended up in the hospital, who do you want to make those healthcare decisions for you? And who do you want to have access to your assets to continue to pay your bills on your behalf? So those are two very important forms you're also going to want to have. And then a couple other things to think about, you know, make sure you have a list of your accounts, your advisors, passwords, things like that, so that when upon your death, your executor will have access to everything, will know who to reach out to inform of your death, where your money is, how to get your digital assets, you know, like Facebook, Instagram, so they can shut those down. So it's very important to have a list of that as well, so that your executor doesn't have to go kind of like digging through your trash for your bills, waiting for your mail to come, trying to figure out how to get your email to get all those emailed receipts and everything. So it's just very important to just have a list, kind of what do I want to have? What my funeral to be like? Do I want to be buried or do I want to be cremated? Where are my assets? How do you access my digital assets? All of that is important to kind of have organized in a way to make it much easier for your executor upon your death.
Peg, any other final thoughts?
No, I think we should go to the listeners. I'm anxious to hear what they want to know from Kate.
All right, that's my cue. A texter writes, my question is, if I am the joint owner of my father's bank accounts, I know it doesn't go into probate, but do I need to pay inheritance tax on that amount when he passes?
I'm assuming that you're a joint owner with rights of survivorship. There are a couple of joint ownership interests, but usually when people are talking about joint ownership, they're talking about with rights of survivorship. And you are correct, that does not go through probate. It's going to pass directly to you as the joint owner. And you will never have to pay. Well, I shouldn't say you will never have to. It depends on the state you're in. There are a couple of states that do have an inheritance tax, in which case you probably will have to pay an inheritance tax, but that's just Iowa, Kentucky, Nebraska, New Jersey, and Maryland.
All right.
Or Pennsylvania.
Are 401ks or bank accounts included in an estate tax?
Yes. All of your assets are included in estate. So all of your investment assets, all of your retirement assets, life insurance, death benefit is included in your estate for estate tax purposes. Properties in the state, out of the state, anything that has value is included in your estate when calculating whether or not you own estate tax.
Does a revocable trust protect assets from nursing homes?
No. Because you have full control over those assets in a revocable trust, you can take money out for whatever you want, and you can revoke it. For tax and nursing home purposes, they just look at that as your asset, and so it is still subject to spend down if you are trying to qualify for Medicaid or medical assistance.
Does the estate tax exemption apply to spouses, or does everything pass to us as a surviving spouse without tax consequences?
So there's this thing called the unlimited marital deduction, which means if you leave assets to the surviving spouse, there is nothing is subject to estate taxes. And federally, that's fine because they have this thing called portability, where if the first spouse to die does not use their estate tax exemption amount, the surviving spouse has both the deceased spouse's exemption plus their own. So next year, a surviving spouse would be able to leave $30 million federal estate tax-free. In a state like Minnesota, they don't have that portability. So if you leave everything to a surviving spouse, you basically lost that first spouse's exemption amount. So if your estate is over $3 million, great, yeah, you've left everything. The first spouse, there's no estate tax, but now you've made that first, the surviving spouse's estate over $3 million, you might be subject to estate taxes at that point. So even though there is that unlimited marital deduction, there is no estate tax that is owed when you leave assets to your spouse. You still may want to do some sort of tax planning to make sure you can reduce or avoid taxes upon the second spouse's death.
All right, 651-461-9226, Bruce, Peg, and Kate. We do have more questions. Did either one of you want to jump in, or should I just keep asking questions of Kate? Bruce.
Just really quick, Susie, I wanted to follow. Yeah, and that was a great job, by the way. That was rapid fire.
Yeah. It was like a lightning round.
I was trying to keep up, and I jotted down one thing that I wanted to add clarity to, Kate. You mentioned that life insurance death benefit is includable in the estate. It could be subjected to estate taxes. It's not subjected to income taxes. Life insurance death benefits are income tax-free, but not necessarily estate tax-free. And where we come into planning opportunities there is we might sometimes draft a trust to be the owner of a life insurance policy so it avoids all taxes, not just income taxes, but also estate taxes. You want to add to that?
Right. That's called an irrevocable life insurance trust. So going back to our discussion earlier in the hour about irrevocable trust, because there's some restriction to access to that death benefit, that death benefit then is outside of your estate, is not subject to estate taxes, and can pass your heir both estate and income tax free. It can be a very good tool if you do the rest of your estate is subject to some sort of estate or inheritance tax. The life insurance and that irrevocable life insurance trust or ILIT can be used to kind of help replace what was lost to estate taxes.
Bruce, Peg, should I jump in with more?
I'd say go ahead.
All right, 651-461-9226. A texter just writes 2 minutes ago, what's the best way to make sure nursing homes don't get all our money?
Give it all away and then don't go to a nursing home for 5 years.
It's
really hard to avoid. You know, you earn this money. I know you want to protect it, but at the same time, the state only has so much money to pay for nursing home for people who can't afford to. And with the one big beautiful bill actually made cuts to Medicaid, which in Minnesota is called medical assistance. It has different names in different states, but basically it's that pool of money that pays healthcare expenses for poor. And so they've found over the years all the loopholes that people tried to find to save their assets and end up on Medicaid or medical assistance, and they've closed most of them. So it is very, very difficult to protect your assets unless you're willing to give away pretty much all control over those assets. So you kind of want to do a cost-benefit analysis. Is it worth it to protect those assets while giving up all control and not really having the access you're used to? In order to qualify for Medicaid, which then might restrict your choice on which type of nursing home you go into, because not all nursing homes accept Medicaid. So then you're going to be restricted and might not necessarily be able to stay in the place you would prefer. So you definitely want to do some planning there to determine what's going to be your best option.
All right, 651-461-9226. We have a caller on the line with a couple of minutes left in the show. Jack from Hugo, what is your question?
My question is this. My wife and I are lifelong Minnesotans, but to do better on tax planning with Social Security and such, as well as inheritance, we're looking to move to Wisconsin. My question is this, on the inheritance over the given that Wisconsin has zero inheritance tax, even over $3 million, is it true then that our child would not have to, they could reside anywhere in order to not be taxed? In other words, even if they were still in Minnesota, they would still be able to get it, the inheritance tax free if my wife and I reside and pass away, say in Wisconsin. Is
all
that
right.
True?
Go ahead, Kate.
Yes, if you move to Wisconsin and don't have any resident, you don't keep any residence in Minnesota. So you move to Wisconsin, move all of your assets to Wisconsin. You're correct. There is no estate tax in Wisconsin and there is no inheritance tax. So even if you have children that still live in Minnesota, they will not be subject to any tax on your estate. That said, you know, inheriting your estate may then increase their estate over Minnesota's exemption amount, so they may owe taxes upon their death, but when it comes to your death, there should not be any estate or inheritance taxes owed if you move to Wisconsin.
Bruce, Peg, do you have any comments before we get to the next one?
Really quickly, I want to go back to the previous one, which was a great question. Kate, the idea of planning to protect assets from, and it's not just nursing homes, it's all forms of senior health care. It is probably the biggest risk that people face in terms of their retirement income planning and having enough assets to last them as long as they live versus not. So that planning is incredibly important. We often refer people to a specialized type of law practice called elder care for some of that planning. But the other thing I wanted to mention is we have a tendency to vilify these healthcare facilities. They're providing a service and they deserve to get paid. And the worst case scenario is if you blow through all your money, we live in a country where they don't throw you out in the street. You still receive care. It's just that you may have spent your loved one's inheritance paying for the health care, and there's nothing left for loved ones. But you're still going to get care. But that is a tough, tough issue from a planning standpoint.
Yeah, I do recommend, if you're in a situation where you think you might need to start spending down your assets, it is very, very helpful to work with an elder care attorney. And also with the somebody within your county who is set up to work with that, and they can talk you through your options and potentially help you keep as much money as you possibly can. If one spouse is still living in the community and only one is in the nursing home, it is essential to speak to a specialist there to make sure you don't spend down your money too much, because there are assets that the community spouse may continue to keep even if one spouse is in a nursing home.
Let's try to get one more, and this is an interesting question, Bruce, Peg, and Kate. My father-in-law is on hospice and currently dying. His house is for sale, and we have an offer. The house is supposed to close in 2 weeks. What happens if he dies prior to the house closing?
The estate can continue to sell that house, because it sounds like there's a contract in place. And so you'll be able to continue to sell the house, and then the proceeds of that house will pass in accordance with his estate plan.
Interesting. I thought that was kind of interesting, Bruce and Peg, right? To have the time thing over
yep.
your head. We have about a minute left, Bruce. Do you have any final thoughts?
I just want to thank Kate again publicly. I hope she's got some idea of the depth of knowledge that Kate has. Peg and I rely on her a lot. A lot of these questions that you asked today, maybe Peg would have known the answer to, but I didn't. So I'm glad you were here today, Kate. Peg, last word to you.
Well, I kind of loved getting the day off here. Kate, I was so appreciative of you and the whole round table that makes it possible for us to give great advice to all of our clients.
Thanks, Kate.
Yeah, and it's I get a lot of variety, and so life is always interesting with the number of people that I can work with here.
Awesome. Let's just say this to our listeners. If you did not get your question answered, you can call 1-888-6-ADVICE and do a free consultation with them. You can also go email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. That's yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Make it a great week, everyone.